Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. And we are filled with Champions League excitement because the big boys are back from their apparently unending winter break. The last 16 of the competition kicks off with the business end of things this week as we get into full swing for the Champions League in the weeks to come. Last week's podcast looked at some of the potential or inevitables from what is to come in the last 16. But this week, we are taking a deeper look at one of the favourites to go on and clinch the Champions League title. 2020 winners Bayern Munich absolutely breezed through the group stages with maximum points. They were also top goal scorers and racked up the most miserly defensive record. On the horizon for Julian Nagelsmann's side is RB Salzburg in the next round, but the Bavarians will have their eye on a run deep into the latter stages of the competition in 2022. On today's show, we'll be looking at the strengths and the weaknesses of Nagelsmann's charges and hopefully, potentially, finding an answer to how or at least try to beat Bayern Munich. On duty today, we have myself, Fergal Brennan, alongside Squawker's chief football writer, Mohamed Butt. We're talking Bayern, Mo. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm a bit annoyed that Bochum kind of just stole our thunder at the weekend. But I'm sure Jasper could explain why the hell that happened. Because I'm just a bit like... Ooh.
Well, hopefully at least, because lending an expert insight into Bayern and all things German football, we have Bundesliga journalist and broadcaster Jasmin Barber. Jasmin, how's things?
Yeah, really good. As Mohamed said, the weekend was a little bit confusing for people who normally watch Bayern, and hopefully I can explain why that happened, although a lot of us are still wondering exactly why that happened.
Yes, we are indeed. And I'm more than confident that you're going to be able to throw plenty of light on that. So before we get into some of the tactics behind what Nagelsmann has done at Bayern so far this season and how we're anticipating them to go for it in the Champions League, we're just going to get a little bit of an introduction and a state of play for Bayern. As I mentioned, 6 wins from 6 in the groups, top scorers from the group stages with 22 goals and the joint best defensive record alongside Real Madrid. One of the big standout stats for me is the third highest XG on the group stages, 13.9 across those 6 games. So they averaged 2.3 goals per game, which is absolutely madness. But things are not all perfect at Bayern at the moment. As you mentioned, at the time of recording, they lost at the weekend to Bochum. Bit of a shock result coming on the back of losing to Gladbach a few weeks back. So the big story building into the Champions League knockout stages for Bayern is not a tactical issue or an issue with Julian Nagelsmann or even their form, because they've been excellent. It's some big, big injury news. So at the time of recording, Manuel Neuer, Alphonso Davies and Leon Goretzka are all pretty much certain to miss out on that Salzburg game. So before we get into how they will line up, what's been the impact of those injuries? Neuer, Goretzka and Davies are massively influential for Nagelsmann in this Bayern team. How have Bayern coped since they've been ruled out? And what is the plan for the rest of the season?
Well, a lot of the injuries that we've got now, we've had similar problems a few weeks back, just before the winter break, especially with the double pivot problem. Kimmich was obviously out for a good month just before. Now Goretzka's out. We've had Goretzka issues throughout the season. So double pivot isn't so much of a worry around the Bayern camp. There are many suitable candidates to play there. There's many players just there. I think some of the more worrying ones will be Manuel Neuer and goalkeeper, because that does kind of set off a chain, especially tactically, of how they then play and how they can be vulnerable. And of course, Alphonso Davies is also a big part of that. So despite their, but again, they've dealt with Alphonso Davies being out before as well. So despite these problems coming up quite frequently, we've seen them deal with that in the group stages. I mean, Barcelona 3-0 while you're having injury issues is still just basically sets the tone of why Bayern are the favourites.
So we're going to build from the back out, and obviously we're going to start with goalkeepers. Manuel Neuer, as you mentioned, is going to miss the Salzburg game. In terms of when he's going to return, as it stands, he probably will or possibly will feature again this season, but he's definitely going to be out for a period of time, and he is going to miss the Salzburg game. So I just want to ask you about his replacement, Sven Ulreich, because it's been a hell of an up and down or mixed bag return for him so far this season. His first game was the infamous 12-0 win away at Bremer, where he basically just leant on the post for most of the game. But the two Bundesliga games that he's played are the two games that Bayern have lost in 2022, the Mönchengladbach defeat that we mentioned, and then obviously Bochum last weekend. Obviously, this is kind of a bit of a joke and a bit tongue-in-cheek, but Manuel Neuer, for his experience, for his mentality, and for the confidence that he just drives through that back line and further into the rest of the team, is massive. How easy can Sven Ulreich assimilate into the Bayern team? Obviously, Manuel Neuer is a big, big blow. Can Ulreich come in and be a capable deputy, or is that a concern for Bayern?
It's definitely a concern, and I think it's more of a concern with the way both Bayern play and how Salzburg play. So Neuer is known for being good with the ball, and it's weird to talk about that in terms of goalkeeping, but good with the ball in terms of playing out from the back and can always find solutions when he is pressured. So if we now go on to Sven Ulreich, who isn't as good with the ball. And basically, I'm not saying Sven Ulreich is not good enough. I'm just saying no one is as good as Neuer. There's very few that you can go, yeah, he's an upgrade. No, everyone's basically a downgrade to Neuer. So when Ulreich is not as good with the ball, you have teams press higher and want to press the goalkeeper because you know you're not going to find the same solutions. And the way to target Bayern is to target them at the very first step, because once they've played that ball out, it's very hard to then press because you've got the players to then just bypass your opponent's pressure. And this is where it becomes a little bit more dangerous, and especially dangerous if when we talk about Red Bull style characteristics. So Gladbach is a good example of that because they've got Red Bull coach there, Adi Hütte, famously from Red Bull. And that's where it becomes a lot more dangerous. Bochum, it was slightly different. So I wouldn't focus too much because there was a complete change of formation. There was only a single pivot instead of a double, and it was completely off balance. So that one I wouldn't take as much. And when they introduced the double pivot into that game, it became a lot more stable, even though they lost 4-2. But yeah, so you can see a lot more problems with Sven Ulreich being pressed up from the first ball, basically. And that's where it still assimilates with Bayern style, but it's just a little bit more vulnerable than when we normally say.
And even with the save, I mean, this is obviously because Neuer is such a transformative goalkeeper in terms of sweeping, in terms of passing. Obviously, that's an obvious area where Ulreich is a downgrade. But even in terms of just making saves, the Barcelona games were a great example in the group stages where Bayern were totally dominant for like three of those four halves, right? First half of the first game, Barca were sort of in it more. But whenever Barca managed to get away from the defence, it wasn't often. Neuer was just impassable. And like, it's one of those things where it doesn't seem like a big deal because Bayern won 3-0, right? And they won 4-0. Yeah. But if Barca score a goal, goals can change a game anyway. I mean, the famous example, obviously, is the Danny Welbeck chip, Man United versus Bayern Munich. Welbeck's running through. If he scores that goal, who knows what happens, right? I mean, probably the same thing happened in the second leg. Bayern just got up and scored the other end. But you never know, right? Goals change games. And Ulreich is not Neuer seems to fill the goal, like just standing in it. He's a massive presence, a physical presence, mental presence. And it's like, oh God, we've got to score against Manuel Neuer. It's like, we've got to really, you have to aim for the corners, then you shoot wide. It's just, he's got such a huge figure, a dominant figure. And Ulreich does not have that. It's not a knock on the guy. I mean, he's not Manuel Neuer. No one is. It's like Alisson is, that's about it. Like, who else has that real domineering presence? Like, maybe Courtois, but probably not even Courtois. So that's going to be huge as well. Because if Salzburg can now approach this and if they can get away from the Bayern defense and they'll have two or three shots in the game, you would assume, even if Bayern dominate, if they can score those chances, because there's Ulreich in goal. I mean, the famous example, obviously, is Real Madrid when Bayern played Real Madrid in 2017-18, and Ulreich was in goal because Manuel Neuer had that foot injury and was out for a whole season. You know, Ulreich was the weak link in that game. Bayern were dominant, and then Ulreich makes mistakes or doesn't defend one, and Real Madrid score on the break. And then Real Madrid go through. And it's like Bayern are like, oh, all our hard work has been undone. You know, it's going to be, how can they cope with that? It's going to be interesting to see.
Strangely, Jasmine, Bayern find themselves in the situation with Neuer's injury and Sven Ulreich coming in. They find themselves with a big problem, but a relatively straightforward solution in that we know Ulreich will come in and he will replace Neuer until eventually Neuer comes back from injury, which Bayern fans are confident will be before the end of the season. But there is this idea that a backup plan needs to be put in place. Moving into defence, there is issues, but less clarity in terms of how Nagelsmann will approach it, and also less blatantly obvious examples of where the changes can be made. Alphonso Davies, as you mentioned, is going to miss out against RB Salzburg, and potentially he's been put essentially on indefinite leave from Bayern Munich due to complications recovering from COVID-19. So given the fact that he's so important to them defensively and offensively, Nagelsmann's got a big decision to make. In the group stages, he swapped between a back four and a back three. Deo Upamecano was generally a mainstay in terms of starts in the Champions League group stages, but so was Davies, and he now misses out. Nicolas Soule, similarly to Upamecano, was a pretty much first name on the team sheet, and the big stat from him from the group stages was the highest pass success rate of any other player in the group stages, a 93% pass success rate. Now, Nagelsmann has tried to find solutions to fix the absence of Davies. Marcel Sabitzer has played at left back. Unfortunately, he was at left back for that defeat to Gladbach, and there was a couple of incidences where he got caught out because he was being played out of position. This is a big question that Nagelsmann has to answer. Arguably, Salzburg won't press them that much, but in the later stages of the competition, if Davies is still out and if Neuer is still out, he needs to decide whether it's a back three and he plays his best defenders, or he plays his more natural back four, but has to shoehorn someone in to replace Davies.
So this could have been a lot easily answered if Bayern didn't do what they did against Bochum on the weekend. I think the way that they've adapted their defence, they don't necessarily have to go to a back three. It's the main... It doesn't make it a necessity, basically. It's the main build-up structure Nagelsmann has used recently, and I think he will go back to a slightly adapted 4-2-3-1. I think that gives Ulreich the best coverage, maybe with Hernandez instead as left-back, because I think he doesn't push. This is the thing. When you have Davies start, they go with the asymmetrical, when it's basically like a back three with Davies pushed far up. So they will probably not go for the push one player far up, and we'll see more of a traditional back four with Hernandez there instead. But then the problem now is that you have most likely Upamecano and Soule next to each other. And the only reason, the fact that, well, that's a little bit scary and is only because of what happened on Saturday. Normally, Soule and Upamecano, and we've seen it countless times this season, they've worked brilliantly together. But now they're back together for a game, and it looked so bad. I know there's always, I'm not sure why, but there's always questions about if Upamecano is actually good enough. And I normally dismiss it because he obviously is. But it was more Sula's performance on Saturday and the fact that he's got this big news story around him at the moment.
Well, he's leaving.
It's why, he's leaving for Dortmund. So these are the kind of questions being asked more of the centre-backs rather than the left. So I would say it's going to be an adapted back four with Hernandez on the left back with Sula and Upamecano. If he changes that because of Saturday, I wouldn't be too surprised, because I think Hernandez in Upamecano or Hernandez in Soule, but then you have to play someone like Sabitzer at left back. And I'm not sure, it's quite a hard thing. It depends on how they do on training and et cetera. But that is the question that has to be answered, because me, even though I analyze again and again and again, I can't tell you which one's going to be better until I see some sort of improvement from Saturday's game. I think Canada's might be better at centre back, but do you want to risk that left back position?
It's a safer bet, isn't it? Hernandez at left back. I mean, he won the World Cup from there, right? I mean, playing very risk averse football with Deschamps. So, but I mean, you know, risk averse football and Bayern, that doesn't go hand in hand, does it? That's like not, you know, keeping it safe. Is that? But then at the same time, if you just for the first leg, maybe I don't know. Like you said, it's very interesting because it's. Maybe it makes sense to be a bit more risk averse because you can't obviously play the same way because obviously you haven't got Neuer. So maybe the trickle down effect from that, from not having Neuer, is like you couldn't then almost push so far up with Davies because then Neuer's not there to sweep. So maybe yeah, you do bring it back a little bit and then you just trust your forwards almost to get it done. I don't know. That could be the way.
But then also and it has to be said, like, I'm very critical of what happened over Bochum. But it has to be said, they were only playing with a single pivot in front of them. Sula and Upamecano still might be absolutely fine as long as they've got a double pivot in front of them. And then you can just utilize Hernandez's left back and then we're all fine again. And especially when we were talking about Ulreich earlier and the game against Real Madrid and other games of shots about Barcelona, we have to remember that this is still Salzburg. Adeyemi is great, Karim Adeyemi from Salzburg is great, but do they have the same individual quality to take those shots, take those chances? With it's probably not the same. Maybe they can, but if we're talking individual quality, then we need to keep that in mind as well, that maybe it won't be as bad for them as Barcelona.
Haaland, there's no Daka, there's no Quang, there's no Minamino. They've lost their big guns, so.
It's a completely different beast that they're going to be facing. Before we move on to midfield, Jasmine, I just want to kind of wrap up on this question of Hernandez and his expectation that he'll start on the left of a three. And it's very easy to look at this and say that when he was at Atletico, he played the majority of his football at fullback. When he plays for France, he does play there and he is a specialist at that position. And logically, he's a more natural fit than shoving Marcel Sabitzer, who's primarily a midfielder, into a fullback role and asking him to do an important job on a Champions League night. Adeyemi, as you mentioned, is the star man for Salzburg, and he will ask questions of Hernandez and the whole Bayern backline. But inevitably, Nagelsmann will be looking a little bit further forward, probably to the next round, to the business end of the Bundesliga title race. And if Davies is still out, the quality of opponent will increase, the gaps get smaller, and it gets more and more difficult to kind of get away with it. Do you think there's a concern that Hernandez, despite the fact that he is a left back naturally, could get found out later on based on the fact that the bulk of his football in the last 12 months has been played left of a three or centre back in a two?
Nah, I think especially when you play for...
It's like riding a bike, he just doesn't forget.
Bayern. Yeah, if you play for a Bayern and you're under Nagelsmann's tutelage, the thing is, Nagelsmann will teach you to be flexible. So that should not be a problem. And sometimes these things are asked of you. I think we just have to look at Kimmich and his basically world class at two different roles to see how good, if you're world class and you can do it in two places, that will be expected of you and you will train like that and you will remember that. So I don't think it should be much of a problem.
Right, we're going to move into midfield and have a look at some of the options, because Davies is probably missing from the back line. Manuel Neuer is missing from in goal. But just as important, Jasmine, in midfield is Leon Goretzka, who's more than likely to miss the Salzburg game. Again, there's a bit of an asterisk next to his name about when he will come back. But his absence is a big blow, because we look back to the group games, this idea of a double pivot in front of the Bayern back line. In four of those six games, it was Kimmich and Goretzka anchoring the midfield, allowing Kimmich to get forward. And since Goretzka's been out injured, Nagelsmann has tinkered. He tried different pairs and different systems. Mark Rocker and Jamal Musiala partnered up in this double pivot. Hasn't really worked. Kimmich, obviously with his, shall we say, absence from the Bayern Munich team over December and the start of January, has now come back in and he's certain to start. Given the fact that Kimmich, as you say, is world-class in different positions and he's able to just impact the game in so many different ways, some of the key stats from him in the group stages demonstrates just how important it is to get his partner right. So in terms of passes into the final third, 44, that was top for Bayern. 14 passes into the area, top for Bayern. He was top for progressive passes and for through balls. Is there a sense that if he doesn't, quote, do it in that pre-phase, pre-assist phase, that Bayern don't get the ball into Robert Lewandowski and Leroy Sané, etc., because he's so important in that phase of the team, and getting his partner right with Goretzka out is absolutely essential?
Yeah, so if you stop those through balls and progressive passes, naturally you're going to just stop Bayern playing, because they play into dangerous zones and that's where they normally make their magic, basically. But I think the partnership and those stats are slightly different kind of arguments. But on the basis of natural pivot player and who fits there, well, Musiala's probably not going to start because he's recently had COVID and didn't start on the weekend, wasn't in the bench, so he's probably still recovering or still in isolation. If he's still on the bench, I'm not sure. So Musiala's definitely not going to be the partner, even though I really like him as a double pivot. Rocca, we've not seen that much of. He's done amazingly in some of his games, especially when there has been questions asked about him, if he will stay. He had one magnificent performance. I can't remember which team, but I remember Nagelsmann giving him a hug after it, so after he came off. But for me, naturally...
Well, you know he did well then.
Yeah. his most natural partner for me has to be Corentin Tolisso, because he's very capable in progressing the ball. He's definitely shown that he can stabilize the game both offensively and defensively, and definitely improved his game since playing under Nagelsmann. So, and he's also paired with Goretzka, and that's turned out well as well. And also Musiala against Barcelona, and they won 3-0. So, despite there being worries on how that double pivot can play with Goretzka out, I think Tolisso is the most natural partner. And you're going to have COVID, you're going to have injuries. This has happened to every team. It's if your substitutes can fill up the role, which we've seen Tolisso countless times this season do. And yeah, I think it's that the double pivot's less of a problem. As long as he doesn't go single pivot again, I think it will be stable.
Yeah, I mean, ideally you want Goretzka in there, right? Man, just man mountain that he is, bench pressing opponents, you know, on the middle of the pitch. You want that on the field, right? But, you know, Tolisso also has, I think, over Mark Rocca, is that he's actually quite athletic as well. Like, he can get, same way that Goretzka is, so he can get around. Because Kimmich obviously is not in the same way, not very physically strong. I mean, he's strong for his size, obviously. But, you know, Goretzka has a real athletic profile, and I think Tolisso does as well to a degree. And so does most Musiala as well, which is why I think he's really good in that role. Obviously, like Jasmine said, scoring up a play. So I think Tolisso, if he comes in, I think will do a good job. I think he'll keep things ticking over. Give it to Kimmich. Mm. Go on, Josh. Lead the way.
And it's also, he had an assist against Dynamo Kiev, and also I think scored 3 goals or 2 goals in the last 5 Bundesliga games. So yeah, Tolisso is just, it's shown he can be the natural there if Goretzka or Kimmich is missing.
Just looking ahead to, this expectation that we do think Bayern will get past Salzburg and into the next round, inevitably again, this question of how to beat Bayern and where are the potential weaknesses, etc. If Goretzka is still missing and Bayern go through to the next round and the level of opponent steps up, if they face a La Liga side or Premier League side, etc., where they'll be asked a different set of questions, Kimmich's natural role, when you look at those stats, is driving the ball forward, surging forward with the ball at his feet, looking to break through the lines either with a pass or with himself. Whilst they might structurally set up with a double pivot of him and Tolisso, inevitably, Tolisso will probably have to tuck in and do some of the donkey work that Goretzka is more than happy to do. As Mo said, bench pressing left, right and centre. That's going to be thrown onto Tolisso to do. If Bayern concede possession and Kimmich is in that advanced role, when we look at Premier League sides who generally play with a single pivot, Fabinho at Liverpool, Jorginho at Chelsea, Fernandinho or Rodri at Manchester City, they're specialists and capable in that position. If Kimmich loses possession or Bayern lose possession and they get broken on, is that a possible weakness? Because then if you get past Tolisso, it's Upamecano and probably Nicolas Sule and then Ulrich in goal, who can be exposed.
Yeah, I think there's two really vulnerabilities for Bayern, especially with the injuries that they are down to. And that is firstly Bayern's build-up play and Salzburg press. So if they lose the ball in build-up, how quickly can they recover? And is Salzburg's press good enough? And is other teams' presses good enough to overcomplicate that, overpower them, basically become the numerical superiority over that? And then the second, when they're out of possession and it's a team's counterattack, is Bayern's rest defense better? And those are, I guess, mainly a main role for the double pivot. But again, we've seen encouraging signs without these players. And if you do it at lower level, you're just going to be expected to do it at a higher level. I think we only ask this of a Bundesliga team because the rest of the teams aren't that great. And that's kind of true this season. But that's going to be always a question. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they've done enough in both their league and the Champions League to say, look, we are good enough at doing this. We can take every... The Bayern losses aren't against the strong teams. They're against the weaker teams. So if you say, Liverpool's press, oh, yeah, that could be a problem against the Tolisso-Kimmich partnership. But there's nothing in that partnership to me that has said they have done badly or they can't do it against those teams further on. The only one that I would say is a worry is probably someone like Chelsea, from style of play. And maybe Man City, because you have to have Man City. But in my experience, we know how Pep is with fiddling his teams in the Champions League that just completely mess the balance. So
Sane as well. Sane would love to just
prove a point.
Give it to Pep. Wouldn't he? I mean, yeah, that's just it. Like, you could see him, oh, Pep, yeah, he does this intricate thing to block off Kimmich and to Mark Lewandowski, and Sane just goes right past Walker and just, yeah. So,
yeah, and that's that's like the main question. It's, we know that Bayern are great in possession, but it's that time that they start to lose the ball and make a mistake in build-up play. These are where those mistakes are going to come from. And this is why I personally can see, and we've seen it in against Dortmund, they normally mess up in the first 15 minutes and then come back. So I can see Salzburg scoring a goal because maybe Salzburg's press or Bayern make a mistake in build-up play that harms them. And that's the same with them, with Salzburg, Liverpool, or whoever they face next.
We're going to move on to attack, and things have been a bit, not negative, but things have been focused on players that are not going to be available and kind of how Nagelsmann's going to have to patch things up. So, Mo, we're going to have a bit of fun with attack because Bayern are fun in attack. They are wild in attack.
Are they ever
indeed. Now, we mentioned this on last week's podcast when we talked about the one thing that's going to happen in every Champions League last 16 tie. And Robert Lewandowski obviously featured front row and centre for Bayern Munich. Just going to repeat this just for the sake of it because it is absolutely mad. Top for goals in all domestic competitions in Europe so far this season and second in the Champions League with 9, in behind Sebastian Haller on 10. Second for goals per 90 minutes, 1.58. And he's basically just behind or just in front of Haller across the board. And we know that Haller had amazing group stages with Ajax. But particularly in terms of his importance for Bayern, of the 22 Champions League goals that they scored in the group stages, 8 of them were scored by him. So that's 27% roughly of their goals were directly knocked into the net by Lewandowski. We know the likelihood that it's going to be Thomas Müller, Kingsley Coman and Leroy Sané as a brilliant front three in behind him, depending obviously the Davies-Goretzka situation. Lewandowski gives a fair guarantee of goals. But is there a concern maybe that because the others are not scoring as much, with the exception of maybe Sané, that again, when we get into this idea of quarterfinals, semi-finals, that if he doesn't do it, the big, big, big goal might not come from one of the others.
Well, I mean, we saw this last season, right? When Lewandowski got injured, they drew PSG and they had 31 shots, 21 without blocks. 12 of them hit the target and only two of them went in. And it was like Choupo-Moting was like, I'm trying, but I'm not Lewandowski. And like everyone else was just, they rained shots on PSG. They should have, I mean, they should have won that game. Like PSG, I don't know how, so I don't know how they came away with a win in that game. Like Bayern should have destroyed them, but they just couldn't put the ball in the net. And we're seeing it, this goes as far back as 2015 when Lewandowski had a concussion before playing Barcelona, had to go out in the mask, wasn't as effective. And as a result, Bayern didn't score at the Camp Nou. I mean, they also had other injuries as well. But, it, you know, it's just when you have a striker it's not even a, I don't even think it's a flaw necessarily, because when you have a striker that's that good, and remember, Lewandowski has 82 goals in 102 Champions League games. That's 0.8 goals per game. That's better. That's a better ratio than Cristiano Ronaldo. I think only Messi and Puskas, I think, have better. Oh, sorry, Di Stefano. Messi and Di Stefano have better, among the top 10 goal scorers, better goal-to-game ratios in the Champions League, which is, I mean, he's going to crack 100 goals, you would imagine, in Champions League. He's beaten Raul already, blown by Raul. Benzema's playing out of his mind, still can't catch him. It's like, he's incredible. And so, if he doesn't play well or doesn't play, yeah, you're going to miss him because he's just that good. It's not even necessarily a flaw in your design, because it's like, oh, you've geared everything towards making him score. Why wouldn't you? It's all he does. He's so good at it. This is a guy who scored 40 goals every season for the last 5 years. Let's not build around his goal scoring. You know what I mean? It's like, of course you're going to miss him. So, yeah, they are putting themselves at risk of Lewandowski being out and then they're not having a goal scorer. But they have other great goal scorers. They have Gnabry, who is always just so underrated and forgotten in everything. And he's just shooting off either foot from 5 to 15 yards, 25, 30 yards. He can do it. He's amazing. Koeman won the Champions League goal scoring, you know, final. You know, so he can do it. He's got clutch genes. Thomas Müller, he's got 50 Champions League goals, by the way. He's no slouch either. He's level with Thierry Henry. So, you know, big game masters. They're just ridiculous in attack. It's like, and this Leroy Sané, who is, I think, possibly one of my favorite players to watch in all of Europe, which, as Jasmine and I were always saying on Twitter, when he's on the left, oh, it's magic. And I'll let Jasmine take over here because I know she'll agree with me. It's magic. Leroy Sané on the left is just beautiful to watch. And Man City were better with Sané. I'll say that. They were more fun to watch. And they play better football with Leroy Sané. They've lost something since they got rid of him. And their best performances since they got rid of him have come when Phil Foden's played left wing. Because Phil Foden is a good analogue, or a decent analogue that they've got for Sané. Sané is magic. Bayern are magic. They're amazing in attack.
And actually, when we talk about Lewandowski, I actually think the reliance on him has decreased. Which it's funny to hear this conversation when I'm like, no, actually, his reliance has decreased. His role has become a little less, especially compared to the Hansi Flick era. Under Nagelsmann's Bayern, they're getting more players into their penalty area to convert chances or to pick up second balls and finish them. And we've seen that. I mean, we laugh at Lewandowski having 26 goals in the Bundesliga, but then Gnabry has 10 and 3 assists. Müller has 7 and 16 assists. Sané has 6 goals and 7 assists too. So it's actually all of them are scoring more, and his actual role tactically has slightly decreased. So I don't think it's as much as of a problem than last year when he was obviously out and we just saw Choupo-Moting have loads of chances and not actually kill off that game against PSG. It should be less of a problem now if he was not there.
I would say with Sané and the kind of strange compliment that I could give him, which does have a weird Bayern Munich angle, is that his performances at Manchester City 2017-18 and 2018-19 are the most pure Premier League winger I've seen since Iron Robin. Iron Robin's first 12 months or so at Chelsea was something else. And he did the same thing as Sané, which wasn't wildly complicated. It was just, I am a left-footed left winger who's really quick that will just run past people as if they're not there and then deliver quality after quality after quality. And I still go back to what Iron Robin, and I know injuries impacted his time at Chelsea, but that little sweet spot of about 9 to 12 months when he first burst in, him on one side, Duff on the other, and Drogba through the middle, he was absolutely sensational.
I would go even further back to Ryan Giggs, because I think Robin played a lot on the right, inverted, obviously, because Robin move, hashtag Robin move. But like Giggs, just like the way Giggs, when Giggs was the young, when young Giggs, which is, I mean, this is so long ago, young Ryan Giggs, when he was this flying left winger or left footed left winger on the left, it was just magical to watch. It's like orthodox wingers, I mean, hashtag orthodox winger agenda, right? This is my thing. And Jasmine agrees with this. But it's just great fun to watch because they spread the play. It's more fun that way. Inverted wingers, it was great for a while. We all had a good time with it. But having orthodox wingers stay wide, spread the play, it's what's led to the best, some of the best football of the last few years. Like Bayern do it, Man City do it, Barcelona at their peak do it. Obviously, they haven't done it in a while. They're getting back to it under Xavi with Adama Traore looking really good. This is the best way of football. And I mean, Real Madrid, to a degree, used the fullbacks almost as wingers when they had their great three Champions League wins in a row. So they were using width as well. It's having crosses and ability to get the crosses and cutbacks in from wide areas is so dead. Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, Reece James. This is, you know, we're seeing the rise of the fullback in England partly because of this orthodox thing. But when a winger does it, it's just extra special. Leroy Sané, running, goal scoring, you know, dribbling. You know, I mean, what was it against Barcelona? 30 yards. They go on, I'll have a shot. Boosh, in the back of the net. He can dribble. He can skill a man up. If you put him through one-on-one, he's going to score it. You know, Bayern's attack is just sensational. And the funniest thing is we're mentioning Ulreich, mentioning, oh, is there going to be a problem with Upamecano and Schüller? They played so badly. Single pivot, double pivot. Against all but three opponents, like Liverpool, Chelsea, and four, I guess. Liverpool, Chelsea, Man City, and then Real Madrid, because Bayern have an issue with Real Madrid mentally. I would back Bayern to blow them away with goals anyway. Even if they conceded like three, four over the tie, I'd back them to score six or seven. Like there's only those four opponents who I would think, okay, Bayern would need to have their full team. They'd need to be operating at full capacity because these are four really good teams. But, and three really good teams and Real Madrid who just seem to have Bayern's number. But, you know, apart from those four, Bayern could beat anybody, even with their injuries. They would just blow them away. Lewandowski, Lewandowski, Gnabry, Sané, Koeman. They're just great, man. They're just too much.
Well, this brings us neatly into a kind of wrap-up, Jasmine, because the whole focus of the podcast is how you can beat or how to beat Bayern Munich. And based on what Mo has just said there, you probably almost definitely can't. But looking at the situation, we go back to this thing, and we do expect them to get past Salzburg. So fans of Chelsea, Liverpool, City, Real Madrid, etc. will be looking and maybe listening to this podcast and thinking, right, come on, give me some bullet points of how we can actually beat Bayern Munich. And the facts are that they've got three massively important players that are going to miss out at least a portion of their Champions League and Bundesliga campaign in 2022. And those injuries are massive because it forces a personnel change and potentially forces a tactical and style rejig based on the players that are coming in. They're going to be the big focuses for teams coming up against Bayern in the next few weeks. So if you were to hit us with a few bullet points, giving fans of other teams some hope, Jasmine, come on, how can possibly, maybe, potentially, Bayern Munich be beaten?
Be Bochum. Be Mönchengladbach. Mönchengladbach have had their number for a while. It's Bayern's bogey team. But to put it simply, high press from the start, by stressing Bayern's build-up play, and especially Ulreich early on, combined with quick counter-attacks from deep defending positions to outplay Bayern's rest defense. Those are the ways you're going to strike Bayern, if at all. And we've seen this in games. Okay, maybe they haven't lost all of those games where they got hit on those, but we've seen them concede that way quite a few times early on.
I mean, Dortmund do it to them regularly, don't they? They counter very well on them, and then Haaland scores, and then
that's it.
Like, ooh, we've got two goals. That'll do for now. And then Bayern's like, go on then.
We have to remember it's Dortmund, and then they just stop playing. Yeah. but yeah, those are some really good examples.
Right, give us a quick prediction. Mo, we'll go to you first. Salzburg in the last 16, and then who knows what from quarterfinals onwards. What's your call for Bayern Munich?
10-4 against Salzburg. 10-4 on
10-4?
Aggregate.
Okay.
They'll score 10 goals. They'll score 10. They're going to hurt them, man. They're going to hurt. They're mad. They lost to Bochum. That's embarrassing. They're gonna hurt these boys. I feel sorry for Salzburg. They're going to hurt them. It's going to be brutal. 10-4 on aggregate.
10-4. Roger, 10-4. Right, they're going to batter Salzburg.
And then they'll make.
Where are they going?
Semis. And if Neuer is out for the semis, then one of those big four teams will dump them out. But if Neuer's back, they could go all the way. They're very, very good. I underrated them a lot after that first Barca game. I thought, oh, are they that good or a Barca that bad? Second Barca game, I was like, no. This is a serious team.
So a Neuer-less Barca get out, knocked out in the semi-finals. A Neuer full Bayern potentially go on and win it, according to Mo. Jasmine, you're watching a huge amount of Bayern Munich all the time. Is that the confidence within the team, within the supporter base, that they've got the squad, they're better, stronger than their rivals to go all the way?
I think Mo is right on anger issues and after losing to Bochum. And you never want to be the team after Bayern's lost the game. I think that is. But I do think Bayern will still be prone to a mistake. So I think 2-1 or 3-2 to Bayern first leg, and the second leg probably 3-1 to Bayern. I don't know what that is on aggregate because I forgot my first leg score. But yeah, Bayern to go through. And then I think I kind of agree with the sentiment that's being said. If Neuer's not back, I think Davies especially for me, well, those two especially, I think, yeah, Real Madrid has their number. I'm not so sure about the other Premier League teams, though. I think it would be a more even than, yeah, them better, because it's Bayern after all.
I think I'm going to go last four as well. I do think that they're better than the majority, but I can just see the injuries. Again, it keeps coming back to this idea of injuries and which players will be available and which players won't be. And I don't think any of the other big teams that are pushing them have this many serious injuries right the way through the team. So, yeah, I'm going to say Neuer or no Neuer, last four, I think, is where Bayern are going to bow out from the competition. Guys, we're going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. I think maybe we've given some indication of how you can beat Bayern, but in reality, we've essentially asked Jasmine an impossible question on how you can beat Bayern Munich. Maybe pray that more players get injured. Maybe that's a way to do it. So
it's mostly just prayer, right? It's like, okay, their players are out, but let's just hope they miss it. Like, again, against PSG, like they had Lewandowski out. He was their everything that season, and they hammered PSG and still should have gone through. So just pray they have an off day. And injuries will help them having an off day. But, like, you know, unless you're Real Madrid, you can't be confident about beating Bayern Munich. That's basically it. Real Madrid can. Everyone else is like, oh.
As someone who grew up as Bayern Arsenal Champions League matches as an Arsenal fan, I wish I had this much how to beat Bayern bullet points back then. I would have been a lot more hopeful.
Yeah, thanks for that. I'm going to quickly nip off and cry into a pillow now that you've reminded me of that. Right, we are going to call it a day. Mo, Jasmine, thanks so much for your time.
No worries.
Thank you.
Great stuff, guys. That's it for this week's episode of the Squawker Talker podcast. We'll be back next week digging into another big Premier League talking point. So hit subscribe on this episode. You know the drill by now, and you can get access to a brand new show as soon as it is ready. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.